You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
What's going on, everybody? Zach Rosenblatt back here for the latest episode of the Talk Is Cheap podcast. You're with Daryl Slater. We're coming off our bye week. Daryl, how was your time away from this team?
Good. Still writing a little bit, obviously, during the bye week about the Giants. But, it was nice to get a little break, not have to come up to East Rutherford.
Not go through all that traffic and all that, yeah. I was actually down in Florida, so I'm going right back for this week for this game. So before we get into, like, previewing and all that stuff, I think we should cover the big news from today, which is Logan Ryan. It's kind of a big deal. He was kept out of practice today due to COVID-19 protocol. It turns out he was a close contact, tested negative yesterday, tested again this morning, and it was a positive test. In theory, if he tests negative twice after 24 hours, so once and then it has to be more than 24 hours after that, then he'd be cleared to go. But the odds of that happening, if it's not a false positive, which the Giants are saying it's not, there's a pretty good chance he doesn't play this week. And it also would be a decent chance he doesn't play next week either. It's 10 days is the usual time that until they get activated off the list. But what was your kind of takeaway from all that stuff we heard today?
Yeah, I mean, obviously really bad timing for Logan Ryan for a couple reasons because, like you said, it could knock him out for a couple games. He's a big part of the Giants secondary. Their coverage has played much better lately. They'll need to have a really good defense, a really good secondary on Monday night against Tom Brady, obviously. And, so it's a big blow for them. And he had a close contact away from the facility.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like another player. So this isn't a situation, it seems like right now, that's where
other players have to quarantine.
Right, yeah. Other players could test positive. So it's an isolated case right now. But obviously, an isolated case involving a really significant player for this Giants defense, which has played better of late. And you have to wonder, how much of a setback this is for this group going into this game against just a really talented offense and obviously the best quarterback ever.
Yeah, I mean, we should get in that. So, ironically, I mean, maybe not ironically is not the right word. But we spoke to him on Thursday in a press conference setting. And, we were talking a lot about Tom Brady and going against him, being teammates with Tom and all these anecdotes, and it turns out those all kind of have to get thrown out the window. But in terms of what it means, I think we can cover that a little bit here. They already don't have Jabril Peppers for the year, obviously, so they were light on safety at safety. They've been able to get creative covering tight ends lately, where they've had James Bradbury go on Darren Waller and on Travis Kelce, and it worked really well. But they can't really do that this week because the Buccaneers also have Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. I'm guessing Bradbury covers Evans again. Evans killed him last year. And then Rob Gronkowski is making his return this week. And Gronk, he's past his prime, but he's still a threat. And so now you have to play likely Julian Love as the other starting safety when, he'd been kind of playing all over the formation, kind of valuable backup role. Now he has to plug in at safety. You're going to have to wind up playing guys like a J.R. Reed who hasn't played a single defensive snap for them. You probably didn't even know he was on the team.
I didn't realize he came back from his successful NBA career.
Yeah, exactly. So they're light at safety now against, like you were mentioning, like just an elite offense with the best quarterback of all time. Like if you thought they could be competitive this week, how much does this impact how you think this game goes? Just the one player not being in the game.
Oh, hugely. Yeah. I mean, even if you talk about past their prime, I mean, Logan Ryan is not. Not that he was ever
a Pro
great
Bowler,
player,
yeah.
But he's not as good as he once was. But he is a guy who seriously helps the communication level on the back end of that defense. Now you're going to be looking to Xavier McKinney, a second-year guy who obviously has a ton of talent, to not only...
he's going to have more responsibility now.
Yeah, well, not only handle the physical aspects of the game, but also handle the kind of conveying of calls throughout the back end of that defense. Now, obviously, the calls go through Tate Carrader, the middle linebacker, in terms of the radio thing in his helmet and the speaker.
Green dot, yeah.
Yeah, so from Patrick Graham calling the calls in. So, but, you know, there has to be a guy in the, who's the captain of the secondary, and that clearly is Logan Ryan, and the Giants will definitely miss him in a game that they really already had a really thin margin for error. And so it gets shrunk even more.
Yeah, and so, you know, that now you figure the Buccaneers are going to get their points in this game. And so the Giants are going to have to win, like, a high-scoring game if they want to upset the Buccaneers. And they haven't been able to play in a high-scoring game in 2 years since Pat Shurmur was coach. They literally haven't scored 30 points offensively under Jason Garrett, the only team in the NFL in that stretch. But we should say on the other side, like, there is some good news. They always get the good with the bad, I guess. But, you know, Saquon Barkley, he's practiced all week. He spoke to the media today. I missed some of it because I was doing a different interview. But it seems likely that he plays on Monday, whether it's a full workload or not. Who knows? Andrew Thomas has been practicing this week. I think he's the more important return. Kenny Golladay and Kadarius Toney, both full participants in practice. Maybe the first time since the beginning of the season or that Saints game. How do you feel about where this offense is at, and was there anything interesting to take away from what Saquon talked about today?
Not really. I mean, he was sort of the usual, but I think in terms of if you look at this offense, they're obviously going to have everybody on the field.
Besides Shepard, probably.
Yeah, besides Shepard. I mean, Shepard would be the only one, and really in the Saints game where their offense had their best game of the year.
He didn't play. Yeah.
He didn't play, and Slayton didn't play. So this will be as full strength as they've been. You know, really since they had
all season,
great game against Saints and all seasons. So I would think that, you know, against this Bucs defense, which has been good at times but not necessarily great, obviously Todd Bowles throws a lot at you in terms of confusion and all those sort of things and disguising coverages and blitzes. So that'll be an issue for Daniel Jones, I'm sure. But look, I mean, Daniel Jones has started 35 games in his career. At some point, you have to be able to handle the complexities, and now he'll have his whole line, or his entire whole line, as much as he's possibly able to have right now because of the season-ending injuries to other guys, and basically all his skill position players. So, look, I think honestly the excuses here are starting to go out the window in the second half of the season. You know, presuming guys can stay healthy.
Health-wise, yeah.
Let's see what this guy's made of. Let's see what this guy is actually made of. Because, yeah, I mean, you're always going to be nicked up. You can't ever expect to have a full 100% participatory offense. You know, they lose Nick Gates. But, yeah, that shouldn't be like a difference backbreaking thing for this offense.
Yeah, the center should never change everything.
Eight games to go. Let's see what Daniel Jones is made of. There's some winnable games out here. This is not one of them, obviously, but this is a game where I think, you know, if he plays well, if you look at this thing in the big picture, you're talking about a 3-6 team, and I get the playoff stuff, whatever. But I think if you look at the macro here, a lot of the rest of the season is about Daniel Jones and rendering some kind of judgment on him.
Yeah, I think that's the storyline the rest of the way. I know. You know, everybody wants to talk about Dave Gettleman's future. I think unless they have some amazing turnaround and they make the playoffs, he's almost certainly gone, you'd think. But, I mean, I thought that last year, so who knows. But, you know, I would think that you can probably just assume he's gone unless something crazy happens. Jason Garrett would be a question. I still feel like they'll probably bring him back unless it's a disaster the second half, which is possible. So it comes down to Daniel Jones. And like you said, like the schedule, like on paper, is not full of like great defenses. They have like the Eagles twice. The Dolphins have a pretty good defense actually for a bad team. And you're playing the Cowboys, whose defense isn't amazing. You have the Chargers, who have been beatable, and Washington again, who the Giants scored 29 points against. So we really need to find out where, like, Daniel Jones right now. You know, how many touchdowns does he have? Only has six or something
eight,
like that, right?
He has eight touchdowns in nine games,
which
this
is pretty
year.
Crazy. And he had 11 and 14 last
right.
year.
So he's averaging under Jason Garrett, he's averaging fewer than or less than whatever the proper way of saying it is, one touchdown per game. You're talking about a guy who, and I only know because I wrote this for today, I think. He had 20, and correct me if I'm wrong, you have it in front of you, 24 touchdowns in 13 games as a rookie.
He hasn't had that combined in many more games since then.
Yeah, so he basically...
In 23 games, he has 19 touchdowns when he had 24 and 13 as a rookie.
Yeah,
so.
Right. So he went from basically two a game to...
It's crazy.
To under one a game. So obviously, you know, this is a guy who is not... Now, there's been issues around him, of course. The line, not being able to throw that ball down the field, not having healthy skill position guys. But, look, I think, you know, he's going to have that. He's going to have his left tackle who's been playing better this season. He's going to have Andrew Thomas down the stretch. Now, again, unless these guys get hurt. But he's going to have these skill position guys. So you'd think that the production would go up if he does indeed have it. Yeah.
Well, it needs, like, it's... They paid all these money for all these guys, and they're all going to be active now. And they drafted all these offensive linemen, and besides, I mean, Shane Lemieux wasn't even good before he got hurt anyway. Like, so, like, they have everybody they were supposed to. Where the fact that the offensive line is bad, like, it's interesting. This kind of ties into it. Like, you talked about how, you know, they're not really able to do as much because the offensive line is bad. Jason Garrett, like, basically admitted that yesterday, which was kind of, I mean, he's kind of, like, passing the blame over to Dave Gettleman, essentially, which is interesting. You know, essentially, you know, they've used Kyle Rudolph and Caden Smith as basically extra blockers. They played Corey Cunningham 13 snaps the last game, and all of them were as an extra. He's an offensive lineman, and he played tight end, essentially. Like, that's like a very large number of snaps. Colin Johnson has basically been a run-blocking wide receiver, pass-blocking wide receiver. So they've had to, like, basically use up, you know, spots in the lineup where you can only have 11 guys on the field, and they've had to use a lot of them as offensive linemen. They got lucky on that one play where they had that, you know, heavy package, and they found Evan Engram down the field. But it's just interesting. Like, they've instead of, like, being willing to take these risks down the field, they've become this conservative team that's scared to do anything, but they're still losing, so I don't really get what they're accomplishing. Like, just the fact that your offensive line is bad, I get that makes it difficult, but I still don't get the reluctance to try and get big plays. I think this team, it's very Bill Belichickian of Joe Judge to feel this way, but I think they are fine with having 15 play drives, even if they only end in a field goal. They like draining clock. I think that's just what they're going to be under Joe Judge. It's not exciting. It's not fun. But that's kind of the vibe I get.
Well, the whole object, obviously, is to score points, right?
Yeah, and so, that's their theory, yeah.
And right, so that's their theory. And we were talking about this yesterday, about the Giants being open to, you know, playing that kind of, I don't know if small ball would be the right word, but slow ball type game, if that, just to make up a phrase. And
For singles instead of home runs,
So here's a stat. Like, the Giants have scored points, not just touchdowns, points, on 35% of their drives this season. That's 22nd in the NFL. So their approach is not even paying off. Like, if they were getting a field goal every time, that's 100%, right? So,
well, and they're the worst team at scoring touchdowns in the red zone, too.
They are last in the NFL in red zone offense, and I think they were either last
or second to last. The Jets were worse last year.
So, my goodness. I mean, they're not even accomplishing the objective of... Yeah, even if you take out scoring touchdowns in the red zone, that stat right there, 35% of their drives end in points. Points. That, any kind of points. So, like, how does that compare to the rest of the NFL? 22nd. So, no matter how you slice it, whether they're moving the ball slowly or moving the ball quickly, they're not scoring. Like, and that's the
same.
Whole
it's the same conversation we were having all of last year.
I mean, there's so many different ways that you can just say how bad of an offense that they've been, but, you know, they want
to
try.
The thing is, they do get to the red zone. They just don't ever, like, finish those drives, which is a bigger. It's almost worse than never getting to the red zone.
Right. And so, you know, something has to give here. At some point, it's going to be somebody's fault besides the injury's fault. This nebulous unavailability, right?
Yep. They're not the only team that has injuries.
And, and they're not the only team that is shorthanded talent-wise. At some point, you know, look, Dave Gettleman's done a really poor job, and he's probably going to pay for it with his job. But, I mean, you can't put it all in the GM. At some point, you know, you have to be
go out there and do
a quarterback who's able to overcome it, an offensive coordinator who's able to overcome it, to a degree of maybe being, like, above 20th in some of these rankings offensively, which they're not. So if they were in, like, the hovering in the 15s or the 14s, you could say, oh, look, you know, they're doing a lot with a little. But they're not doing anything with a little. So, like, at some point, it's got to be someone's fault besides the general manager. And they're at a point here where I think it's going to turn, the worm is going to turn here toward Daniel Jones. Or that's not even the right way of saying that phrase.
You're like Patrick Graham right now.
What does that even mean? But, like, I think it's going to, sort of the blame arrow is going to start pointing, I think, a little bit more at Daniel Jones now that he has these assets back, if they're unable to.
Because you can't just keep making the same excuse when they're actually here.
Yeah, the excuses are going away.
And I should say, and, you know, they invested $72 million in Kenny Golladay, and they used a first-round pick on Kadarius Toney, and neither of those guys have scored a touchdown yet.
Remarkable. I mean, Kenny Golladay has been a massive disappointment, largely because of injuries, which were a concern for him coming in.
Yeah, which were a thing with him coming in. You kind of alluded to this earlier, and it's going to wind up having to be a part of the discussion, whether we want it to be or not, is that they're, because of this extra wild card spot, they're just legitimately in the playoff race right now. And they probably will be for most of the rest of the way, unless they lose a lot of games in a row here. But they're 3-6. I'll pull up the standings now. The Falcons just lost last night. I think they were tops in the standings at the wild card spot. They're 4-5.
The Falcons are so bad.
Falcons are terrible. And the Giants lost to them, by the way.
The crazy thing about the NFL putting this extra wild card, I mean, obviously they do it for TV money. I get the idea of it,
yeah.
But every year.
Yeah, the Panthers at 5-5, who the Giants beat 25-3, are at 7th. They just picked up Cam Newton off the street as their starting quarterback. They're the most likely to make it right now.
This seventh team every year, either both of them in each conference or one of them, is just going to be a terrible team. You're going to have a terrible team making, at least one terrible team making the playoffs every year. So from a competitive standpoint, it's silly. I think the way they had it before was obviously better. I mean, I understand the TV money aspect of it, but you're right. I mean, the Giants mathematically are going to be
The thing people leave out, like when they say they're in it, They have to jump 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They have to jump 6 teams in order to get into it. Like, it's not like as cut and dry.
So they're 13th.
They are going to be playing a bunch of these teams coming up. Like, they have the Eagles twice. They've already played the Falcons, the Panthers. They play the Bears at the end of the year. They're 3-6. I don't know. So they're, like, again, you and I have talked about this a bunch. Like, everybody wants to point to their schedule being easy the rest of the way, but they're not a good team, so they're not like a lock to win it. You can't just say like, yeah, they're gonna win this game. The reality is you can say they're probably gonna lose to the Buccaneers, and so then you're 3-7. The odds are they're not gonna beat the Eagles both times. They haven't done that in a very long time. And so then, you know, then you're in theory 4-8. And then you have to beat the Dolphins, who have played better lately. You have to beat the Chargers, who are a good team. You have to beat the Cowboys, who are a good team. You have to beat Washington.
The last like, that's two games a lot, that's are a lot. Winnable.
You have to go like 6-whatever over the last.
Yeah, I think if you look at their last two games, Washington, Chicago, those are winnable games. The Dolphins game's a winnable game. That's 3, so that would give them 6 wins.
Yeah.
And then maybe they steal one from the Eagles. Those are the games.
I was gonna say you'd think you need at least 8 wins, probably 9 wins in order to make the playoffs.
I think they
would have to go either 6-2 or 5-1, right? Or I'm not leaving the math wrong. 5-3, or
I think their ceiling total is 7-10.
Yes,
that's their ceiling, and I don't think 7-10 is going to get you in.
No,
that's my. I mean, just doing the math right now, chalking up a loss on Monday, and then wins over one over the Eagles, then Washington, Chicago. I'm not even going in order, and the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Those are the winnable games, right? Even if you say they split against the Eagles. That's 7 win. I feel like John King here, right? So like that's 7. That's 7-10, and I don't think 7-10 gets you in.
No. And that doesn't save anybody's job, probably. I mean, Jones maybe sticks around if he looks okay in those games, but like that's it's
Gettleman
like,
should be gone at 7-10.
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing is like you can also see the scenario where they get those wins all at the end and John Mayer's like, "Yeah, we see progress."
Yeah, we play well at the end of the season. The end. I mean that I don't
We beat the Eagles twice in Washington. I don't know, that's pretty good division wins.
I did. He likes John Mayer. John Mayer likes Dave Gettleman, and so you know, maybe he finds an excuse to keep him. But I just, if you look at it objectively, and you don't even have to look at it like coldly and harshly. I think just through a basic objective lens, now, another double-digit loss season at 7-10 should not be enough.
I mean, they went all in this year to be a winning team, so right. They spent a lot of money, and they don't have cap space next year now. So
right.
All right. Before we go, we can. What's your prediction for this game? I had 31-20 before the Logan Ryan stuff. I would say the Buccaneers probably score more than that now, maybe 35-40 range. What's your prediction?
I had 28-20 Bucs before this. I'll give them another touchdown and make it 35-20. They'll cover that 11-point line.
I mean, keep in mind, it's on the road on Monday Night Football against Tom Brady, who is coming off 2 losses. So.
And this is a crazy stat. Brady, in his entire career,
you said this
he's earlier. Lost 3 straight games, like just once ever, and it was when he lost 4 straight in 2002. So, I mean, that's an insane stat.
This isn't football-related, but you also pointed this out, I think, to Joe Judge the other day. He's like 4 or 5 years older than Joe. Like, that's, like, significantly older than him.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I think Brady's, what, 43 and Joe Judge is 30.
I mean, there's a bunch of coaches where he's older than them in the league now because there's a bunch of young guys, but that's still just why. I can't imagine it's happened many times in history where a player is that much older than the coaches in the league.
It's remarkable. I mean, if you take all of Tom Brady's games into account, I was talking to one of the other writers, it's a simple addition to do, like add his playoff record and add his regular season record and starts. He's won 76% of every game he started. 76%. I mean, it just puts into context like how remarkable his success has been.
Yeah.
And it just shows, obviously, a guy who wins that often is not going to lose three straight pretty much ever, which has been the case. And so the Giants would be making history on Monday if they won this game. I think it would tie for their fourth biggest point spread upset in the last like 32 years with the Seattle game last year. So we were probably having a similar podcast back then saying they had no chance to win that game. I feel just as strongly about this game, but we'll see. I do think the Bucs cover the 11.
All right. We'll wrap it up on that note. We'll come back with you guys next week. It'll probably be Thanksgiving by the time you guys hear from us again. So happy Thanksgiving in advance, and thanks for listening.